powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Very excited for our guest right now joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. It's Paul Seawald. Paul, how's it going?
It's great. It's great. How are you guys?
We're fantastic. Appreciate you joining us. I'm going to get started with that Mets series because, Paul, you had a 1-2-3-8 in the finale against the Mets and had a little gesture afterwards for fans. Honestly, we loved it. I'll let you know right now. We loved it. But take us back to that moment. How were you feeling?
It was just it was an emotional weekend, positive and negative. It just it brought back a lot of memories in the 4 years that I was there, both positive and negative. There were I'm very thankful to the Mets organization for not only drafting me, but developing me, getting to the major leagues and giving me time there. So I'm incredibly thankful to the Mets organization. There were quite a few things that I think probably could have been a little bit better while I was there. But it's led me to be a Mariner, and I'm pretty happy about that.
Now, Paul, what were the emotions being in that situation, right? I mean, as a player, as a competitor, how do you control the emotions that you have and being able to hone it in to your benefit?
Yeah, I think as a relief pitcher, you can really let your emotions fly. It's only one inning. It's, you get the run in and you don't have, you're not out there for 3 hours where a position player has to, turn it on for an at-bat, calm it down, turn it on, that sort of thing. Is as a reliever, you can just come in fired up and let it fly right out of the gate. And that's pretty much what I did. I just, I was pretty juiced to get in there. It was emotional getting back out there for a place where I made my debut and a team that I played for a long time. And the boos when I got out there kind of motivated me a little bit extra. And I was excited to shut them down and, go 1-2-3-4 and on Friday and 1-2-3 on Sunday.
Paul, does that make relief pitching more fun than starting pitching?
Fun is a borderline word. It's stressful.
Is that the word I'd use?
We get absolutely no credit for doing well. We get all the blame for blowing games late. It's I liken it to a kicker on a football team where when we do well, you just assume that we're going to make the field goal or get 1-2-3. And if we don't, you feel like you blew it. Versus what happened in the first 8 innings. So
yeah,
it's quite the adrenaline rush. I don't know if fun is the right word that I would use.
The thing is that much like a kicker on a football team, once other people try it, they realize how hard it is to do. And that like literally no one even gets close to kicking a field goal.
Yes. Yes. It looks very easy on your 60-inch TV at home on your couch. To nail a 45-yarder in the rain, and then all of a sudden you go and you kick a 25-yarder at your park, and it goes wide. Yeah,
yeah.
Come on,
I get the feeling.
Come on, Paul.
Can you have
your sweeping slider work perfectly on this one? Come on, man.
High pressure situation.
It's almost like I'm not a robot and I'm a human.
It's crazy. I wanted to make sure I asked you this. We're going to talk about the season. We've got you for a couple minutes here still, but we had you on a while ago while CBA negotiations were still going on. Everyone listening loved it. They felt like they got a good breakdown and were able to understand the situation. We haven't spoken to you since the new CBA agreement. How do you feel like the relationship is right now between players and league?
I think everyone's just very thankful that we came to an agreement. Everybody's excited that we're playing baseball. It's just a sticky situation. It's just very difficult. We have views of how the league could be better, and they have different views, and that's very frustrating, but that's just part of CBA in labor negotiations. Anyone who's a part of a union knows that labor negotiations can get ugly at times, and unfortunately ours did this off season, but hopefully we can have a great 5 years where things start to build, and when we go into the next one, and that would be 2020, what year would that be, 2026, then we'll be in a better spot. Mm-hmm. In our communication and our relationship with MLB, for sure.
Paul, something very cool. Everybody focuses on what you do on the mound, but what you're doing off the mound is pretty awesome. You and your wife are pledging $200 per strikeout to Eastside Baby Corner, which provides a lot of different things. But could you talk about that and how you got connected and what was the connection there between you and your wife that made you want to support this particular organization the way you guys are?
Yeah, we just wanted to give back to Seattle as best we could because we feel like Seattle's given us so much in just the 2 years that we've been here. And, I keep thinking, I can't remember where I ever saw this, but I saw it one time and I always thought, you know, that would be fun if I could pledge, you know, money per strikeout or per win, whatever I could do to an organization in a community that really means a lot to me. And, you know, Molly and I thought that this was the perfect time, that we were fortunate enough that we could do that and wanted to give back to the Seattle community. And, you know, so we tried to find an organization that really hit home. And, you know, when we had our daughter Chloe last year, it kind of stuck with us how incredibly difficult it is to raise a child. And, you know, we are so fortunate that we have all the resources in the world, you know, from multiple car seats to, you know, we have everything we could possibly need, and it still is very difficult. So when you think about families that aren't nearly as fortunate as us, that, you know, can't afford formula, diapers, a car seat at all. It's just, you know, it's really saddening. And we thought Eastside Baby Corner is an incredible organization that gives, all the time and effort you could possibly give to these families in need. And if we can help them, if we can have one family in Seattle, that makes us feel great.
Thankfully, there's no shortage of strikeouts from Paul Sewald, so able to give back there. So it's really awesome. It's a really cool thing to do in the community, and it's always cool to see guys get involved in different and unique ways. And Jake and I thought that was really cool. You guys are in a bit of a tough spot. Obviously, you're a young club, so I think everyone, including you guys, probably thought, look, there's going to be learning curves, there's going to be moments, there's going to be a down year. How do you work yourself through a slump? Are there conversations you have with people? Do you just kind of, hey, it's the nature of the game?
No, you know, I think that word slump comes more, no offense, from the media than it comes from our clubhouse. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who followed the 2021 Mariners knows that May was not exactly our best month last year either. And right about Memorial Day, we turned it on and ended up winning 90 games. So there's absolutely no panic in this clubhouse whatsoever. That I can tell you for sure. Is it the start we were looking for? Of course not. But we also weren't, you know, expecting to lose a couple of very key players. This is a very tough stretch of, you know, who we're playing, where we're playing. You know, we have multiple East Coast trips, go back and forth, playing some of the best teams in the league. This was always going to be one of the tougher stretches of the season. And, you know, when we do it without a couple of people, that's pretty unfortunate. But there's no panic in there. We know that, you know, as long as we stay afloat for a little bit, we're going to get hot, and we're going to have a month where we go, you know, 25-5 or 24-6 or something like that. And we're going to gain 6 or 8 games on whoever's in front of us in the standings. And we're not worried about that. We're just going to get back to work. And, you know, we're just trying to stay afloat. And it's unfortunate that we've lost the first two in Toronto, but that doesn't mean we can't win today and go to Boston and take care of them and have a good road trip. I mean, we won the first series of this road trip against a team who hadn't lost a series all season. So, slump is it's a strong word. I think we're doing just fine. We're not doing as well as we had hoped, but we're not doing, you know, we're not last. We're not panicking here.
Hey, it's a fair point. Love the answer.
Paul, you know, as you guys are going through this process, as you mentioned, these growing pains and everything else, it's natural to happen over the course of a long, long season. So from your perspective, and you mentioned some having guys out, it's also happening in the bullpen for you guys. So how are you trying to help the bullpen out as you're having new guys, new faces come in and out? Is there a leadership role that you take on with a lot of these players, or is it just, you know, hey, we're focusing on our craft and making sure that each individual pitcher is ready for their moment?
Well, I think Donovan feels like they're an equal part of this team. That's part of the culture that we've developed, that each person on the 26-man roster is worth the exact same as everybody else. So, you know, these young guys that are coming up, I don't think that they feel like, well, you know, I better do this because Paul, you know, is going to say something to me, something like that. I feel like we have a very open line of communication that, you know, if Wyatt Mills or Penn Murphy has to ask me a question, we are more than able to answer those questions and get, you know, give my personal advice from what I've accumulated over my 5 years or 6 years in the big leagues. But I think those guys have done a great job. I think if anybody watches, you know, Murph and Millsy were hardly people that we were counting on for big, big innings in May. And I think they've pitched fantastically, especially Murph coming in these late games in Toronto. I think these guys are gaining confidence every time they go out there.
You're never going to see in May huge crowds on a weekday. But I don't know about you, Paul. I've noticed that at least being local, the crowds on weekends, even to start the year, just feel bigger. And even though, like you said, it's not the start you guys wanted, I think the fans are still here, still excited. It's the earliest I've seen this level of fan excitement in a season. Do you guys feel that when you're out there, especially on a weekend series?
You can feel it. I would argue that even that the midweek games have been very good crowds. I think they've been incredible. I think opening weekend was out of this world excitement. That was pretty darn incredible. You know, then we had a tough road trip and we come back and the crowds have still been really, really good at T-Mobile Park. So I think Seattle fans are incredible. We have not had the success that they had hoped the last 20 years or so, and they have not shown anything but excitement and support and, you know, they come out in draws and they've been excited all off season and they're still excited for the season. And we really appreciate that. And, you know, like I said, we still feel very good about where we're going to be in September, regardless of how we've started April and the first half of May. I think we're going to be just fine. And I think Mariners fans are going to come out and they're going to support a really good team come the end of the year.
Paul, I'm always fascinated by stories that always have a unique journey. And for you coming into the transition of last year to the Mariners and really, you know, finding your groove and everything else, how has that allowed you to approach the following season? And every time you hit the mound now, is there a certain level of appreciation for, you know, finding the right place and the right fit?
I think I am more than appreciative that I turned my career around and did a 180 in my time in Seattle last year from my time in New York. And I'm incredibly thankful to the Mariners organization for not only giving me a chance, but giving me the right resources to turn myself into a different pitcher. But, you know, last year is last year. It has nothing to do with this year. You are fighting for your job every single time you go out there, whether you have a contract or not. That contract I have for this year is for this year only. And if I want one next year, I have to pitch well. So for me, it's, you know, I go out there like it's the last time I'm going to pitch ever again, every day. And that's how I pitch. That's the only way I know how to pitch, whether I, you know, have a spot on this team guaranteed or not.
Hey, Paul, last question here before we let you go. I'm just going to make it a fun one. Earlier this week, I had a gaffe where we had your teammate on, George Kirby, and I may have had some bad info, and I asked him about his relationship with his brother, and I like went all the way through the question with this long setup, and he was like, I don't have a brother. And I didn't know what to do. Jake continued to make fun of me for a long time. So I've decided to project some of that discomfort onto my next guest, who is you. Okay. So, Paul, help me out. And please, if you can think of the most embarrassing moment that you can quickly recall that you had, I would love for you to share it with us and listeners.
The most embarrassing experience that I've had. Wow. That is. Whew.
It's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
You are really putting me on the spot.
I know.
You try to block out. You try to block out being
That's
embarrassed.
That's exactly what it is. Or maybe just the last time.
You know,
it doesn't have to be the worst. But just the last time.
I just think, you know, goodness. Now I'm trying to think. I'm having a hard time thinking of when I get embarrassed. I try not to get embarrassed too often. That is kind of my goal. This right here. Something that I've ever been embarrassed about while I'm on the radio. That probably is not
Paul,
my best. That's not my best. I would like to have a good answer. Next time.
Yes.
I'll
see you. Okay.
Paul, next time, come
ready with one, and we will absolutely start there.
100%.
Like, it doesn't matter. You could come off a World Series win, final out, and we'd be like, Paul, look, congratulations, but first we need to hear your most embarrassing moment.
Yeah, we need to come back and redeem ourselves from May 18, 2022.
I'll never forget this day.
I am right there with you, Paul. I've been asked those questions in your shoes, and I always, the thing that stinks about it is you hang up the phone, and you, like, 5 minutes later, you're like, oh, that was the moment. That was the moment.
I will, and then now I'm going to write it down, and then you guys call me back in two months when we're in first place, and you want to go talk about how well we're doing, I'm going to distract you and say, no, we have to talk about embarrassing moments first.
Perfect. He is Paul Sewald. Paul, you're always a favorite of listeners here. They always text in letting us know, and they're doing it right now. It's been such a pleasure to have you on. Good luck in the rest of this series and the rest of this road trip.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Yeah, I worried about pitting Paul on the spot there.
It's always so hard because
he's a funny guy. I thought he might have something, but I believe that he's someone who doesn't get embarrassed easily.
Well, but it's like as an athlete, like there are certain questions.
There's a different barometer.
Yeah,
of
you're so but you're so used to be dialed into answering a certain type of questions that you don't really ever think about those random things like
right.
that, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just like you're just it just catches you off guard. Like every interview that I had that ever went into that, and maybe it was because I mean partly because I wasn't witty or funny enough. But
true.
Just immediately, hey, watch it. But just immediately trying to come up with something like that, that's tough. That's why when you ask those questions and guys come up with them, I'm always super impressed.
Super impressed. Jake, first of all, you're much funnier than you're giving yourself credit for. I think people don't see that. But also, secondly, I'm worried that I
They don't see it, but I'm telling you.
I think that most people are like, Jake, analysis, he brings it. And it's like, Jake is hilarious. It's just that more often than not, his best jokes are maybe during breaks.
Yeah.
My expense.
I save them for later.
All right. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
The Heat won game one of the Eastern Conference Finals over the Celtics last night. What's the real headline?
Real headline, I think you mean Jimmy Butler's Heat won game one of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes.
41 points for Butler, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. A phenomenal performance.
You know what's crazy about Jimmy Butler is he's had 5 40-point games in his career, all of them in the playoffs.
Hey, that's clutch.
All of them in the playoffs.
That's clutch. That's what that is.
Jimmy Butler is a player that, you know, has a reputation for being extremely brash, having no filter, and not necessarily being the most likable teammate overall. However, he quickly becomes a very likable player to root for because he's like the antithesis of what a superstar is supposed to be or what you want your superstar to be. And I find myself rooting for Jimmy Butler and the Heat right now, wanting to see them go to the NBA Finals, wanting to see them win because, you know, Luka for the Mavs would be someone that I would love to see too. But Jimmy Butler is 32 years old, been through a lot in his career. It'd be a pretty cool moment. We were focused on CP3 and 37, and here's his opportunities to get himself a ring. Yeah, well, Jimmy Butler's got a pretty nice situation going on right now, and if he can keep this level of play up, he puts his team in a pretty good opportunity to get themselves into the finals.
What are some of your guys' favorite storylines of the East and West Conference Finals right now? Mine might be the relationship between Jimmy Butler and the team, or Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra, just to kind of see like how far can chaos go? How far can a cantankerous relationship take you?
Oh, it'd be amazing.
To an NBA championship. What about you guys? What do you think is like you're just personally following? It could be a player where you're like, I'm just personally invested in this player, this story.
Honestly, right now, I'm personally invested in Jimmy Butler. Like that's I am staking my claim in terms of being invested in Jimmy Butler. But I also I'm curious because with the Warriors right now, it feels like they're pushing this limit of an end of an era type of situation. I don't know if that doesn't accurately depict what's going on with the Warriors, but it feels that way. Do you feel that at all?
Well, I was going to say, I think it's interesting to see if Luka can take the mantle. Mm-hmm. If they're going to hold on, like you were saying, Jake, because mm-hmm. they're finally healthy again. And the Warriors, when they were healthy, they were a dynasty.
Yes.
They still have that core in place. So can Luka and his superstardom kind of shine past them now?
And if they do, then what does that mean for the Warriors in their future? Right? I mean, it doesn't mean that it's over. It doesn't mean that it's not bright. But, you know, I mean, Steph Curry's getting up there in terms of his age. You know, they've been through a lot together. Can they keep the group together overall? Draymond Green, all of them. You know, it just puts into question. I think it puts in a little bit of doubt into how good the Warriors can continue to keep being as a franchise.
Notice no one said anything about the Celtics. Coincidence? I think not.
Well, I don't like how Jake keeps mentioning all these people in their mid-30s. Like, that's a
problem.
Yeah,
I know, Jake. What's your deal?
It's father time. It's professional sports. I'm sorry. It's professional sports.
Jake, how old are you? Next headline.
Just turned 30.
Headline rewrites.
Well, the XFL has reached an agreement with Disney to broadcast every game on ESPN, ABC, and FX when the league returns in 2023. What's the real headline?
The XFL received great broadcasting news. Will its product make the most of it?
That is a really Interesting
question.
Interesting
it's
question.
A good question. Lefko, he's so close.
Why don't you just secretly change the scoreboard? Secretly change the scoreboard without him knowing, and then you'll get some more points.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Question.
That's not the rules. The XFL, they put out a really, I thought they put out a pretty good product overall in year one, and it got shut down due to COVID. And that was a big bummer because I thought that they were really building some momentum as the season went on. I would have loved to have seen, you know, a little mini playoff, how that would have played out. The television product, I thought, was good, not in terms of the overall play, but in terms of the dynamics, in terms of how they covered the broadcast, how, you know, the different rule changes, it made the game interesting. And the one thing that was needed was an upgrade in talent. And, Stacey, you know, the only way you can do that is to get past year one, to show people that this isn't just a one-and-done thing or you know, a two-year-and-done thing, that this is something that can be sustainable. And if you can show sustainability and being on ABC, being on these big television networks like the USFL was able to be on Fox over the spring, that allows you to bring attention to you. And if you're trying to compete for top talent in college football, in high school recruiting, which is exactly what the XFL was going to try to do at some point in time, that's how you get it done, and that's how you can create a successful league that people legitimately have interest in.
Headline rewrites.
Well, the media booth was evacuated at Oakland Coliseum after a live possum crept not just in, crept down from the ceiling. What's the real headline?
Surprised we didn't hear there were possums at Minute Maid, considering how much they love trash cans.
I see what you did there.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, I like it. I like
it. Things that love hanging around trash cans. Rats, possums, raccoons, and Astros.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly right.
I think my favorite part of this headline isn't the original headline, although I do love that. The photo that came along with it, although I do love that. Or the headline rewrite, which is not as good, but it's not too bad.
Well, give yourself some credit. Come on.
It is instead all of the stories that were sent in to us today from listeners who had a moment kind of like this, where it's like, yeah, I walked into my house and there was a raccoon inside. Or like I took out my shoe from my closet and there was a black widow, and just like really creepy, weird.
Yes.
Either close calls, funny stories. Someone said that there was a bear that fell onto a zip line. Because, or what's it called? A bridge?
Yeah. And because this stemmed from irrational fear. So what I think people were saying is, hey, you may think they're irrational.
Yeah.
But they're very real, because this is what happened to me, right? I mean,
and
I talked about how I always, when I get in the car, I always check the back seat. Like,
oh,
there's somebody
about quicksand?
That. Yeah, your irrational fear of
it's not irrational.
It is.
It's not. If I said, what's scarier, getting into an empty car or walking over quicksand?
Stacey, you never know who
could
be in the back seat.
You can easily avoid quicksand.
You can easily avoid quicksand, even though it looks like all the other sand around it, and you don't know until you're sinking into it.
Stacey, just
really
we don't have the displacement, as we learned, to sink into it. We have too much displacement.
That's right. I believe
also,
that I would sink right to the bottom.
Also, Stacey, just always carry around a rope. You could be like Indiana Jones and carry around
a rope. I throw a rope and it does nothing.
You
there's
just
no anchor at the other end.
And
I just
throw
a rope.
Yeah, no, you just yell at somebody close by, grab it!
Help me!
No, they all sunk into the quicksand, too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you're getting at. Okay.
See, that's what I'm saying. I just don't think that my fear of quicksand is... It's irrational in that it's not around here. It is not irrational in that quicksand is not a scary concept.
Sure.
You know, it's
but
scarier
also,
than
you know,
that?
It's, you know, it's a scary concept.
Stake
somebody
holes.
That is staking out in the backseat of your car, laying down, waiting for you just unexpectedly to get in your car, and then they jump you.
Okay, Jake, I don't mean for this to be rude or dismissive. But,
sure.
Like, honestly, why would someone be trying to, like, be in your car?
Because it's a very cool car, first and foremost.
Look,
and secondly,
lots of people would want to steal my car. Excuse you.
They really want an autograph.
I don't know. But you gotta keep your head on a swivel, Stacey.
All right. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle. I just like the idea of being like, he climbs in and he's like, oh, God, there's so many baby toys back here. What am I doing?
Also, the irrational fear. The
worth.
Irrational fear that Mike Lefko also said is very real when you live in places like Florida. Is snakes being in your toilet.
That's
my biggest fear.
I check my toilet every time. I do not go into that situation blind. You can't. You can't afford the risk.
And that is exactly what led to all the great stories that were sent in. I loved every single one of them. Even the ones I didn't read on air, they were all great. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and SeattleSports.com. A former Washington State star just became available via free agency. That's next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, taking a look around the NFL very quickly here. This hour of Jake and Stacy brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We will start with a new signing, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Former Giants Pro Bowl cornerback James Bradbury has agreed to a one-year, $10 million deal with the Eagles.
This is a great signing by the Eagles. You pair him up with Darius Slay, and that's a really, really good DB room. I mean, honestly, just really, really good. So I think that when you're talking about the Eagles and what they have been able to do with their roster, I would have loved for them to be able to do just like a hair more offensively, but getting A.J. Brown is a big get for them. Now you got A.J. Brown, you've been able to really put them in a position where Jalen Hurts has got enough weapons around him and enough playmaking around him where you're really going to get a good feel for who Jalen Hurts can be and is going to be. So that is what I'm going to be really excited to see. And then you pair it with what they've been able to do defensively. I thought the Eagles had a really good draft for themselves as well. They're definitely a team to watch in the NFC East. I really like overall what they've been able to do. You know what I'm surprised about, Stacey? I'm surprised that James Bradbury, you didn't hear more of a aggressive market for him, to be honest with you, because he's a good football player. He's a good veteran corner and an above average corner. I mean, he is a good football player. So I would have thought that there would have been a few more teams that would have been a little bit more aggressive in how they went about trying to acquire him. But, you know, hey, he stays in the NFC East, going from the Giants to the Eagles, and he's going to be paired with, playing right next to Darius Slay, which I'm sure was a very intriguing situation for him.
Guys, choose one of these young quarterbacks that will take the biggest step this year. Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence. Who will take the single biggest step?
How can Justin Herbert take a bigger step? I mean, he has been fantastic in 2 years. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, who's going to take? Then maybe your answer is like, I don't actually think he's going to take a big step. I think it's going to be Tua with Tyreek Hill, or maybe I think it's going to be Jalen, or I think it's going to be Trevor Lawrence, or maybe you think that Trevor Lawrence isn't going to take a big step. And not necessarily who's best, but who will have the most development this year.
The guy that I'm rooting for the most right now is Tua Tagovailoa. And the reason why I'm rooting for him is because there's just been so much doubt around him from the moment he got there. There has really not been a consensus feeling about Tua that, hey, this is the guy, we're sticking with him, he's going to be the answer for us. There's been a lot more questions about him, to be honest with you, and this is really going to be a make-or-break year for him with the Miami Dolphins. There's really no excuse. You got an offensive-minded head coach that is very well thought of in Mike McDaniel. Then you have, then you also were able to go out and acquire Tyreek Hill, who's one of the more dynamic receivers in the entire NFL. You pair him with Jalen Waddle and the other group of guys that they have there. I mean, Tua's got to really perform, and I expect that he will, because I just believe in the offensive system, and I believe in the personnel that they have been able to put together there. So I'm pulling for Tua.
Well, I think. Hopefully Trevor Lawrence having an actual coach.
I was going to say,
who cares?
Yeah. I was writing down all the pros. I was like, Zach Wilson, Jets had a great draft, got a top wide receiver. Justin Herbert, great development, love his head coach. Trevor Lawrence, as a pro, I wrote, no Urban.
Seriously.
Anything
no
is
Urban
better.
Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, going into year two, and he has Doug Peterson, who has proven he's a quarterback whisperer. So I think Trevor Lawrence, if he is number one overall pick worthy, will certainly benefit from a guy who's been a head coach before and kind of knows how to work in the NFL.
Speaking of the Eagles, I mentioned that a former Washington State star is now a free agent. It is not Gardner Minshew. The Colts have signed free agent running back Philip Lindsay to a one-year deal and waived former Washington State running back Max Borgi, who had signed with the team as an undrafted free agent. Huh. Jake, you think that there's any chance that Seattle will add Borgi in camp for some depth to an oft-injured running back group? Because I can tell you right now there are Washington State fans that are really hoping that's the case.
Oh, I know. I know there is. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It would just be pure speculation on my from my perspective. There's not really a big need for them at the running back position to bring somebody like Max Borgi in, but why not? I mean, why not give him a chance, give him an opportunity? You know, honestly, I'm just surprised that he's in this position right now, that he is somebody that is being cut at this stage of the offseason rather than, you know, somebody giving him a chance on a 90-man roster to play his way potentially on the team through preseason. So I have to imagine that he's going to get himself onto another roster here at some point in time. I think he's a very talented player. Just don't know the fit that he has in the NFL right now, but it's all about getting himself into the right situation. So hopefully that will happen, because I would be incredibly intrigued to see Max Borgi in the preseason and see if he can't make some noise.
Speaking of the Jets, by the way, and Zach Wilson, the Jets have signed 10th overall pick wide receiver Garrett Wilson to a four-year, $20.5 million fully guaranteed deal. All three first-round picks are now signed. That's Sauce Gardner, Jermaine Johnson, and Wilson.
Yeah, this is, I mean, for the Jets, they have laid the groundwork. Now it really is going to be up to Robert Saleh to show that he can be that developmental coach, that he can be the guy that can change the culture that has been there with the Jets, that's been awful for years and years, and really turn that around and turn them into a winner. I mean, you talk about players, and gosh, why am I so sentimental right now? I'm sitting here talking about my emotional draw to Tua and how I'm rooting for him. Well, there's also an emotional draw to somebody like Robert Saleh, who I genuinely believe approaches the game the right way, coaches it with great enthusiasm, cares about his players, and I appreciate a coach like him. And I want to see him succeed with the Jets, and it would be good for football if in the NFL if Robert Saleh was able to be a successful head coach with the New York Jets. So there's really not a ton of excuses right now other than, hey, we're young. Even though we got a ton of talent, we're still young and we're still a young football team, but he has to show that this team can take a step forward and show legitimate growth.
Question for you, Jake, or both of you. When does the pressure mount for a head coach taking over a bad franchise? I don't mean a bad team or a team with a down year. Like if the Steelers were to finish at 500, obviously Tomlin would never go anywhere. But I'm talking about a bad franchise, historically bad franchise, the Jets.
The problem is that
the Texans,
typically
not historically bad, but
the Jaguars,
very bad. The Jags,
but typically with historically bad franchises, they operate historically bad, so they don't typically give the time needed for a lot of these coaches to really turn things around, and so they want to see immediate progress, immediate satisfaction after a year or two, and that's just not how this works. It's not they like the Detroit Lions, in my opinion, and we'll find out whether or not Dan Campbell is the right guy for the job. But the way that the Detroit Lions are approaching this thing over a true five-year window and saying, look, Dan, unless this is a complete disaster and you're not showing any progress with this team, we are going to give you 5 years to turn this thing into a winner. Build it for 5 years. And you know that that's what you've got, that you have that ability. It gives you a lot more comfort to make some of the right decisions rather than trying to jumpstart your rebuild. And I think because a lot of teams are feeling the pressure to have a quick turnaround because of the nature of the beast that is the NFL, you do it wrong more often than not. And I think truly 3 years is probably the appropriate time to really know that a franchise is heading in the right direction.
All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. We played you two important cuts from Clint Hurt's interview with Mike Salk earlier this morning. We are getting back to the final two next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Friday, May 27th is 90s night for the Mariners. The first 10,000 fans will receive a Mariners neon pink hat. Get your tickets now to watch the M's take on the Astros for 90s night at mariners.com/tickets. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Earlier today, we played you some cuts from Clint Hurt's interview, exclusive interview with the Mike Salk Show. We didn't get to all of them, so we played you what we felt were two of the most important. Now we're going to get to two other really important cuts to play for you guys during this interview. So in case you missed it, we're not going to replay the same one. So If you missed it and you want to check it out, you can listen to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's going to be 30 minutes into hour one, where we go over what it means to shift from a 4-3 to a 3-4, if we're going to see a mix of both, and kind of that illusion of complexity is what we're going to explore now along with Jamal Adams.
And if you do listen to the podcast, please hit the subscribe button. Doesn't cost you a thing. It'll download all the shows right onto your phone, and you'll get them right there. It's easy and convenient. And if you do, please, if you subscribe, please rate and review 5 stars. But wanted to give a shout out to someone who gave us a review. A connection to home. I moved to the East Coast last year, and listening to Jake and Stacey is a great way to stay connected. So we really appreciate you.
Forgot the comments.
Oh, yes.
They're funny, fresh, knowledgeable, and they're very responsive and connected to their audience. They'll probably read this on their show. No, seriously, guys, read my review or I might have to change it. Just kidding. Or am I?
I love it. And you know what? We delivered for you, so you don't have to even worry about, you know, your review. You review, we will, if it's a nice
honestly,
view, it's a funny
you,
view,
it,
it's
well,
a good
some
view.
People have left mean reviews, but then still
sure.
given 5 stars. Someone just said, five stars.
I mean, really appreciate the honesty.
It's
but
fine.
Stacey,
would have been too much effort to criticize, so just
five stars.
Yeah, look, your ratings goal are is,
I had 311.
We are very close. We're at 295.
Guys,
we're at 295.
Help Stacey get to 311.
Okay, I'm not sure where this
Jake
number...
has bringing donuts.
No, sorry. No!
Jake!
No, let's go.
I'm not here after today. I can say whatever.
Jake, if we get to 311 reviews, you have to bring in donuts.
Why? Why?
Because I said so. Because Lefko said so.
This is a team
Everyone
effort.
Everyone in favor of Jake doing this, please raise your hand.
You can't see if they're raising their hand.
Lefko, raise your hand.
Okay, I'll raise my hand.
Me and
no Lefko
are raising our hands. Well, no one can see it, but Taylor's raising
his
hand.
All right, if we get to 311 reviews,
yeah.
Okay, if we get to 311 reviews by the end of next week, I'm in.
We did it.
Okay.
We did it, you guys.
All right.
Pay attention, Top Pot.
Once again, Top Pot, I am for sale. My sponsorship. I have no loyalty if another donut company would like to.
Exactly. If anybody else would like to step
donuts.
Up, it would be fantastic.
Favorite food.
Just let me know.
Okay, well, great. If we get to 311 reviews, Jake is going to bring us all donuts.
By
Friday of next week. By Friday of next week, if we get to 311 reviews, that's how many more? Like 15 reviews? We can do that. 15 of you can leave a review.
I don't know. I mean, people are pretty, either they're lazy or they've
got
a lot of stuff to do. I mean,
people
are busy.
No, I believe in you guys.
Really
Apple Podcast,
busy.
Leave a review so I can have donuts. And by the way, Jake has never had to bring in donuts.
Stacey, why do you want donuts? All you do is cut them up anyways.
Yeah, and I eat them. But more importantly, you've never had to bring them in. I've lost every
slivers.
Bet that involves donuts.
Well, because you make terrible bets.
Clint Hurt was on with Mike Salk this morning. We got to two cuts. We're going to get to two more. I want to talk about how this defense is going to help Jamal Adams. So, Clint, how specifically will it help Jamal Adams focus on what he does well?
I've been speaking with him. He's been speaking with Coach Desai and Coach Scott as well, continuing to learn his stuff and get him up to speed. And putting him in positions to be successful, to be at the best version of himself. He got a lot better. We hear all the little talk and stuff like that about, these things he has to get better at. Jamal is a guy that's a workaholic. He pays attention to the details. He got a lot better playing and, in quarter coverage safety last year with those things. And now it's continued to accentuate what he does great. Well, what is that? He's great as an underneath defender. He's an outstanding run fit defender and tackler and aggressor. Obviously, we already know what he is as a blitzer. All right, that comes very natural to him. But it's just continuing to detail out his coverage responsibilities and whatnot. And he's putting all his work in on that right now, along with getting healthy.
Two things, Jake. Number one, when I said all in favor of getting to 311 reviews and Jake bringing in donuts, please raise your hand. Multiple people texted in a hand or a raising hand emoji, just so you know. Number two, how can this defense, based on what Clint Hurt is saying here, evolve and alter the way it uses Jamal Adams? Because if there's one thing we can all agree on, we can disagree on whether or not you think the Jamal Adams trade was worth it. If there's one thing most people can agree on, it's that you'd like to see Jamal Adams used more effectively, even more.
Well, it's the whole key to this defense. You talk about the jump from being just, hey, we've been a bottom half defense, and we want to make the jump to be a more respectable defense. You can do that by changing some of the philosophical differences of, what Clinton Hurd's talking about in terms of, you know, spot dropping versus match zone principles. You can do some of the accentuating and highlighting your edge rushers and allowing those guys to rush the passer more than dropping back into coverage and what they did last year. You could do some of those things, and that will be little improvements. But if you want to be a great defense, the key to that is unlocking Jamal Adams and getting the most out of him. And as Clint Hurt said, that doesn't necessarily mean as just a blitzer. That means being an all-around great safety. And that is also making sure that you are putting him in good positions to thrive in coverage and allowing him to be comfortable in the role that he has. Unlocking Jamal Adams and putting him in that situation is a big job for Clint Hurt, Sean Desai, and everybody else, because you can't pay him $17.5 million and just say, we're not able to get the most production out of him. You have to be able to do
that.
You
can't do it. I promise. Two clips. So here's the next one, talking about simplifying the defense but making it complex. Here's what he means.
You know, if you have four different responsibilities, five different responsibilities a guy can have, but all the players learn it, then what you have the ability to do is you can move your chess pieces around. You can move Jamal Adams. You can move Jordan Brooks. You can move Quandre Diggs, who are, you know, your guys that where you want to put your guys, your top guys in positions to be super successful. Daryl Taylor, same way. And now they can play in multiple spots. And what happens is that screws with the offense, because when the structure changes, then their blocking schemes, pass protections have to change. Who they account for in the running game has to change. So the complexity to the offense is difficult because they have a lot of different things they have to prepare for blocking scheme-wise. But for the defense, for us, it's not hard because the techniques stay the same. We're just changing alignments and things of that nature. For us, that's how we create the complexity for the offense.
We've heard about the illusion of complexity for an offensive coordinator. What about for a defensive coordinator? 1 minute.
Well, I mean, Clint Hurt, I think, put it together beautifully. And so far, you know, I've been very impressed by him in terms of his interviews and what he has been able to share, but also how he, you know, coaches like to keep things very much to themselves. And Clint Hurt is very open in terms of, you know, the game of football and teaching the game of football and trying to help people understand what they're trying to accomplish, which translates into him communicating that to his players. But what I would say is the complexity of, from a defensive perspective, is you can make subtle changes to your front. You can make subtle changes to where Jamal Adams or Daryl Taylor lines up, right? They can line up in a different place, but the execution of the defense remains the same. The calls remain the same. Everything else remains the same. But what it does require your defensive players to be able to do is it requires them to be able to know all positions, everyone's job around them. It's just like a receiver, Stacey. You can't just be an outside X receiver, okay? I'm only lining up to one side of the field. It limits the type of production that you can have or where you can move them. If you know the entire offense, I can line you up at X, I can line you up at Z, I can line you up in the slot, I can line you up in all sorts of different positions. And it's the same thing for guys like Jamal Adams, Daryl Taylor, and whoever else they want to manipulate and use to be able to put them in the right matchups.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. There's a somewhat recent example of how the Seahawks can have an okay contributor at quarterback but still be a Super Bowl team. But what's the key, and how do they get there? That's next.